Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Radio 106.1 FM. I'm Rebecca and I'm chairing this meeting today. We've got the good people from the Tuesday Big Book Study Group. That's my home group, so this is pretty nice to be hosting my own group this morning. We'll dive into the meeting start with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. As I said, today we've got the Tuesday Big Book Study Group with us. We normally start our meetings with half a chapter from the Big Book. Each week we do a reading and share on that. Because this is a sort of shorter meeting, we are going to do a slightly shorter reading than what we normally do, and I'm going to ask Paul to get us started with how it works.
Yep, so this is how it works from the Big Book, Chapter 5. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. As some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear these clear the three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he was sought.
Thanks, Paul. You're listening to the AA meeting on air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. if you're listening to this and think you have a problem with drinking and need some help, we have a free call number 0800 229 6757, which is 0800 AA Works, and that is run by alcoholics. It's 24/7, and so there's someone there to answer your call if you need help. Now I'm going to pass on to I'm going to ask Guy to share on the reading, please.
Hi, my name's Guy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Guy.
Yes, feel privileged to be here today and talking on air. I've done it a few times before, and I've always you just share my story. I was drinking at an early age, 13, 14 years of age. My father was an alcoholic. It was in the family then, and obviously I inherited a bit of that, and I picked up drink, and I loved that feeling that drink would give me, that oblivion feeling. It was my sort of escape from life. I never coped normally like other people. I reacted to, if the teacher said something to me, I would react in resentment and anger. And, so I was never, I sort of felt like the black sheep, really, I always felt like the black sheep of the family. And so, I grew up, always, wanting, to be a good person and, not be like my father. And, I didn't really turn exactly like him, but, the alcohol, did. It brought me out of myself, and, I didn't drink for many years at all, I would often say I'll have three or four tonight and then end up with 10 or 12 or 20 and wake up and, the bed was wet, and I was like, I feel so ashamed, My mother used to put my mattress outside the front door. I'd get home from high, I was at high school, and I'd feel so ashamed, and I'd get angry with her and say, why are you doing this to me? She was only doing what was best for me. But so I was sort of like right from then, drinking was a problem, and it just progressively got worse. I end up drink driving. I'd end up in A&E. I did an early stint in it was like a military type prison where the judge thought this would sort me out, but I'd just come out and, I'd return to alcohol. So, I tried everything. I wanted to stop, but I couldn't see a way out. And I would hate, going to work and the boss would ask me, how was your weekend, and I'd say, oh, it was good, but, the reality was I couldn't tell him the truth, went to bed, wake up in A&E, abused the neighbours, I lived like a double life, and that, I felt sort of like really embarrassed by it. was always dodging people and getting money. It was hard work, you know. Long story short, you know, I went and lived in Australia, and then my drinking just got worse and worse. And often my people I lived with would talk about me, and I would hear them saying, I think he's got an alcohol problem. And things really started to hit home. And I thought, no, I've had enough of this. I was just so mangled up. You know, inside myself, I was just all confused and mangled up. You know, I just had a backpack, and I had no job, and I was really, you know, at the end of the road. And I thought, I'd heard about AA through a friend of mine. So I phoned a detox clinic, and I went in there for assessment, and they took me in. And from there, it's sort of pretty well much been not all sailing, good sailing, but it's been, you know, sober. I was introduced to AA through that detox clinic. My first AA meeting, I was in pyjamas because you get pyjamas when you're there for a month, and then you've got to go to AA meetings on a Friday. It was a Friday night I went, and there were people there just like myself. Most of the people that there in that meeting that night had been where I'd been, so they would come up to me and say, look, we know what it's like. And so there was a light there that went on, and I thought, wow, these people got something I like. You know, they've got a job, they're living sober, you know, they've got contentment and happiness, and, you know, and I thought, you know, I want some of that. And they said, well, you know, you've got to do some things, you know, and we've got a 12-step program, and it's, you know, in the big book, and so, which has just been read out, how it works. And I thought, wow, you know, if I do this, you know, I'll get these, what they've got. And certainly it's not been easy at all. You know, I haven't had to pick a drink up. I was suggested that I got a sponsor and help me with the program, and I did. And it has been really helpful to me. I haven't done this on my own. People have helped me out. But really, you know, that honesty, you know, I was 100% honest. And I love the start of that. It says, really, have we seen a person found who's thoroughly followed our path? You know, it's once you're in AA and you give it 100%, you know, your life just goes from good to good. I just feel, you know, I know it's a day at a time, at AA, but to me, I always think, you know, I'm here for good. You know, I just can't see, there's nothing in drinking for me. There's nothing out there. People at AA, you know, I relate to. And, you know, I'm working with someone at the moment that's really struggling, and just go through those steps again. And that first step, you know, powerless over alcohol. I'm 100% powerless. I'm not like normal people. I can't drink alcohol. But, you know, through the help of AA and through sponsorship, I've, you know, stayed sober. But, yeah, it's just great to be part of something that's greater than me, you know, that we find a power greater than ourselves here in this AA program. And it doesn't have to be a religious god or anything. And a lot of people use AA as a higher power. And for myself, I did when I first came in. So, yeah, it's designed for anybody. That, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you know, AA does work. And, you know, I've been sober for like 37 years now. And the years are just flowing by. They're just flowing by. And I have such a full life and feel really lucky, and not lucky, but privileged to be part of the fellowship, which is worldwide. And just going away next week to Australia, and I'll go to AA there. And it's just like anywhere we go is AA, and it's just so good to be part of the solution rather than a problem. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Guy. You are listening to the AA Meeting on Air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. There are other ways of getting hold of the AA in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We've got an email helpline, which is just help@aa.org.nz. If you need help and feel like you can't sort of talk to people, that's another option. The details on the AA website, aa.org.nz. Now I'm going to ask Paul to share for us next.
Hi everyone, I'm Paul. I'm an alcoholic. it's a privilege to be reading from the Big Book. Big Book is where the solution is. Thinking back, the book was written in 1939, so it's what, about 85 years ago. And you know, I'm grateful that the people that wrote that book wrote it, because today there is a solution, and prior to that there wasn't one. And man has had a problem with drinking since grapes were first crushed, apparently. So I started drinking alcoholically as a kid. My first drink was after a running event, and they had a function after that, and the bar was open to everyone, including children. So I went and got myself a jug of spirits and Coke, I think it was, and I went into blackout from my first drink. And I don't remember much of what happened, but I do remember the feeling that I had was incredible, and I knew that was something that I wanted more and more of. At the time, I thought it was the answer to all the problems that I was having in my life. I was kind of born into quite a dysfunctional family, and my mum was alcoholic. My dad wasn't around much, and I didn't feel a part of, I kind of was on the receiving end of a lot of abuse and rejection, and alcohol, it just seemed to be like a saviour. The alcohol was my solution at that time. It took away, what I was feeling, and it also took away, my thoughts. And my thoughts were pretty dark at that time. And, so it gave me some hope. And I soon after that, I was taking alcohol to school on a daily basis when I was an intermediate. And probably not many kids do that. Well, maybe, anyway, there weren't many, doing that when I was at school. So I had a problem from a pretty young age, at 11. And my drinking, went on for 40 years. It took me a long time to kind of reach the end of the road. I was pretty high functioning. I was able to kind of drink and kind of hold down jobs, which is pretty unusual in my experience. But I was no good at kind of maintaining relationships. So I didn't learn how to bond well in my family of origin. And so I kind of carried that, into my own kind of personal life, my family life, my work life. I just didn't bond with people well. And my way of bonding was to try and get people drinking with me. And that was kind of my my go-to. Let's have a drink. and I kind of gravitated towards people, who liked drinking. So I'd kind of, stick or find other people who were alcoholic drinkers like me or heavy drinkers. And eventually it all kind of caught up with me. I just found that I, kind of my road to destruction, if you like, was through I couldn't maintain performance in my workplace, and I'd kind of worked myself into a, you know, quite a senior role in an organisation, and there was a lot of expectations on me to perform. And I, you know, because of the amount that I was consuming, I just couldn't perform. And so, yeah, my performance suffered, and eventually my boss of 6 years had to basically let me go. And it was a very sad day for him and a very sad day for me. And I you know, kept from him, you know, what the real reason was for my lack of performance. And, you know, he was almost pleading with me to tell him, you know, what was going on that was causing, you know, me, you know, not to perform and to behave in the ways that I were. And I was just in complete denial. I was just dishonest. And I really regret that today, because, you know, I genuinely believe that he would have helped me. He would have got me the help that I needed at that time. But I needed to lose my job. And then after that, I lost my home. I lost, you know, all my possessions. I became homeless. And I lost all my, you know, my family turned their back on me, all my friends and so forth. So I quickly, you know, losing my job, within about 9 months, I had lost everything, and I didn't want to carry on anymore. The alcohol had stopped working for me. It used to be that I drank because it made me feel fantastic, and then eventually, you know, I'd wake up and I'd just feel bad, and I drank just to feel okay. And then, you know, after a time, a depression came over me, and then nothing would shift that depression. I just would drink and drink to try and, you know, feel okay, but no matter, you know, what I put in my system, I wouldn't feel okay, and I just didn't want to carry on anymore. And it, you know, when I was at that place, someone who was in recovery happened to be having a conversation with me and just kind of looked at me and could see, you know, that, you know, I guess could see what was going on for me, because, you know, they knew this disease that I had and could see it in me, and just asked me a simple question. Was, had I had enough? And that question kind of caught me completely by surprise. You know, I wasn't expecting that question, and I couldn't dodge it, you know. I just felt like because I was at the end of the road, I had nothing to lose. I just said, yeah, I have had enough, and I don't know what to do, you know. And he said to me that he had been going, you know, to meetings, and they had helped him, and suggested that I just go along to a meeting and just try it out and see if it was for me. And it was just that's all he said. But it put in me a spark of hope, you know, because at that point I wanted to end my life, and he was providing me with another option that I didn't think was available. And the idea, you know, of asking for help never ever occurred to me. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I didn't know about my condition. So I went to a meeting, you know, and I took that suggestion and I followed it. You know, I went to a meeting, and when at my first meeting, I kind of realized that, you know, I was with a bunch of people that had the same problem as me, but they'd found a solution. And it just blew me away. You know, there were people at that meeting that had, you know, someone had like 5 years up, they hadn't had a drink, and then I found someone had 10, and then another person had 20 years, and I couldn't believe it. It just blew my mind. They all were telling my story, and they were also, you know, sharing a story of hope as well, you know, that there was a solution, and that solution was available to me, and they were willing to help me. And up until that, you know, at that point where I was out of my life, no one wanted to help me with anything. But here were people that were just kind of open, accepting, and, you know, wanting to help me. So I was encouraged. And so, yeah, I from that meeting, I asked for more help. I asked someone to help me get into a treatment program, because, you know, I didn't think that I could recover, you know, just sort of from the streets. So, yeah, I was accepted into treatment, And at treatment, we were encouraged to go to meetings, and I started going to meetings regularly from there. And so from the first day that I went into treatment, and I haven't had a drink since then, and that's, you know, 11 years and nearly 6 months, 11 years, 5 months, 20 days, actually, by counting. So it's, you know, it's worked for me. So treatment didn't work. It got me to where I needed to be. It got me into meetings and got me started. But only two of us graduated treatment out of 20. Having had a drink during that time. And I don't know about the other guy. I haven't seen him since. But I'm still going. So when I went to meetings, I heard you know things about you know how this program works, what I needed to do. So yes, you know, get a sponsor, work those steps. So I started working the steps when I was in treatment, you know, and I think that you know made a big difference to you know why I'm still sober today. My sponsor told me that you know after 40 years of drinking, you know my life wasn't going to turn around in 5 minutes. You know by the time by the time I left treatment, you know I'd be ready to go back to work, start getting you know my life. You know, back on track. But he said, you know, it's probably going to take about 2 or 3 years, you know, to, you know, put down a foundation that you can build a life on. And so that's, you know, so I basically, you know, decided, you know, I needed to work, you know, just on myself for the next 2 or 3 years. So I wasn't even in any shape to go back to work. So I just started volunteering, did some voluntary work. And I went to a meeting every day for the first 3 years of my recovery. You know, that's what I did. I got a sponsor, worked the steps, and I started you know getting involved in service and helping other people with recovery as well. So that's you know how I started, and so I'm more than 11 years, and I'm still doing 5 meetings a week. and I'm involved in a lot of service for AA as well. So AA saved my life, and so it's an absolute you know privilege and pleasure to be able to you know to give back and to help others, because that's how this program works. You know, one alcoholic helping another. You know, that's exactly how this program works, and we have the solution written for us in the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm grateful for the people that you know provided us with that book. So that's me. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. You're listening to a meeting on air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and this is the Tuesday night Big Book Study Group. From Wellington. Now I'm going to ask Claire to share next.
Thanks, Rebecca. My name's Claire. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Claire.
I think what within the reading, what really sticks with me is rigorous honesty, because I think a lot of us can just live life daily and not really take account for what we do and say. And my road to AA was a really long one. I've only recently come into the rooms, and most recently over the last sort of 15, 16 years, I've been a very high-functioning drinker, drinking alone at home. Wine mostly, and appearing on the outside to be really in charge of everything. But going back to when I first started drinking, I've heard a lot of alcoholics say that over the last year or so, that their first drink was like a real epiphany. And that was definitely the case with me. I was about 14 years old. And growing up in a rather unruly, dysfunctional family, as often is the case with people in AA, and it was for me, it was where I had to be very good in order to get love and acceptance, I had to be a good girl. And when I drank, I discovered that I could not be good and blame it on the alcohol. So my drinking was always, it was quite manipulative. It was a case where I could just let that part of me out that I had to keep caged up most of the time. So I used alcohol as a sort of, I think Guy said before, like you're living a double life. And that's very much what alcohol was like for me. It was, I would go out on weekends in my teens and 20s and get absolutely sodden and do really terrible things and then say, oh, well, I was drunk. And, I mean, you can only do that for a certain amount of time. And then as you get older, it starts to, people start to look at you differently. Although I think at the time people looked at me like, wow, you really go for it. and I did. I think there came a point where it stopped being this thing that allowed me to get away with stuff and it started controlling what I did. Everything was my life revolved around when I could drink. But on the outside, I was still functioning. So I didn't ever get to the stage where I lost everything, although I would say internally I did. I very much felt like there was a loss of self, an inability to really ever enjoy anything fully or really experience anything fully. And that's probably the biggest change I've noticed since I've been in the program is I can really, really experience things that I love, like music or, exercise. really be in it and really enjoy it. It's sort of healed that dissociation, I suppose. But it is a daily program, and it is difficult too. It's that when. Honesty isn't a simple thing. It's something you've got to really work on. It doesn't just happen. And it means constantly, questioning yourself. And I read somewhere that in Christianity, the word repent is actually defined literally as rethink. And I think that that's actually what you're being encouraged to do in AA on a daily basis is rethink everything. As I work the steps, my outlook to the world and to the people closest to me is constantly being challenged. And if you're you do have to be quite strong to let that happen. And also it's giving up control because a lot of people say their drinking was out of control. My drinking was all about control. It allowed me to control my feelings and my actions and I've had to give that up and I have to give that up on a daily basis. But it's magical how things all just fall into place and how very, very quickly the craving and the desire to drink left me. That was just so fast. And I'm eternally grateful for that. Every morning I wake up, I'm grateful for that. And I think I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. You're listening to AA on Air, Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. My turn to share now. I'm Rebecca. I'm an alcoholic. And... it's great to hear so much that I relate to, which is, my experience whenever I am in a meeting. And I guess that's why I stayed and what's helped me to keep coming back. My earliest drinking experience that I remember was about 8 or Sorry, it was about 11, and I was way overseas with my parents. We were on a boat ride in Portugal, and they were doing this port tasting, and my mum didn't like the port very much, so she kept passing me to sort of have sips, and I really liked it. It was sweet. It made me feel good. Until later on, when you know I was a bit woozy and a bit seasick, it was just a weird little thing. But I probably started drinking of my own volition and choice when I was about 14. Probably was the first time I went out to get drunk, and that was the goal. Whenever I drank and whenever it was offered to me, I would take it, really lean into it, because it let me step outside of myself and perhaps not worry so much about the social anxieties or whatever was going on. I heard someone else say it was just the solution to everything. And I never questioned it. Growing up, mum and dad, I guess, wouldn't necessarily say they were heavy drinkers, but they were regular drinkers. So it was something that happened every evening with dinner. Dad had this sort of romantic idea about the European approach to drinking, and that was the solution. That was the way that you would drink without harm, and this is the way forward. This is sophisticated. So it never seemed weird to me, the idea of drinking every day, because that was what I saw around me. My mother, on the other hand, had two siblings who ultimately they both died of their alcoholism, and a range of other people sort of within her side of the family who likewise drank themselves to death. I think my grandmother had three brothers who were alcoholics, and unfortunate ends. So there were these two sort of sides, but it was convenient to think that alcohol was an everyday thing. I liked it. I ended up working in the wine industry, and I was great at that. I wrote wine reviews. I ran fine wine shops, and I would say, I work in the wine industry, and sometimes I bring my work home, which really was just that I was on it 24/7. Pretty much. For someone who had been drinking alcoholically for quite a long time, working in the industry was a dream job and excellent camouflage, or so I thought. It didn't change, unfortunately, the sort of the rotten stuff underneath, which was going on there. I had difficulty with relationships, as was something I heard said by someone else, and I was always broke. I was unreliable. I was wildly unhappy. I had found myself in this sort of career, quite a poorly paid career, I guess, because I hadn't been able to cope at university, and I couldn't seem to finish anything. My behaviour when I was drinking, and the fact that I was always drinking, I was always seemed to be a bit drunk, was that, you know, causing some consternation. I still had friends, but things were becoming difficult, and you know, I had trouble paying my rent and things like that. The priority was always drinking, and that was my priority over paying for my rent, showing up for things, anything that you could think of. If I had a choice, I would choose the alcohol and the immediate reward. But, you know, I got lucky in that a couple of things were happening simultaneously. One was that my performance at work was dropping, and I wasn't able to afford all the alcohol I needed to drink. So even though I was being given vast amounts of alcohol for free, I still felt the need to essentially steal from my employers. And this was becoming evident that I was helping myself to the stock. and at the same time, so I was hitting a crisis point there, and with being kicked out of flats more and more frequently. And at the same time, some friends of mine had sort of stopped talking about me and talking to me about that my drinking and what it looked like. And, you know, one friend of mine was in recovery for another addiction, and in that fellowship that he was in, he had a friend who was also an alcoholic and attending AA. He must have said, oh, I've got this friend, I think she might be an alcoholic. And, you know, connected us to sort of start talking. That person took the time to meet me and talk to me about my problem and whether AA might be the solution, and took me to my first meeting. You know, that first meeting was on a Tuesday night. It was a Tuesday night big book study group. You know, I heard the big book being read. I didn't really understand it at the time, but I was a bit cabbage, you know. But I came back, and I could do that. I could show up. I could come back. And, you know, I didn't drink after that first meeting. That meeting became my home group. It's still my home group today, after a bit over 9 years. We read through the big book every week. I couldn't even tell you how many times I've been through those words, including the times that I've been taken through the words in the big book by my sponsors. And the times that I've taken my sponsees through the big book. The beauty of it is that it was relevant then, it's relevant today. It's actually quite simple. People like to say a simple program for complicated people. The power of the program is, you know, in one alcoholic working with another, like was done for me. Taking that time to sit down and say, you know, do you think you have this disease of alcoholism? If you do, then, you know, there's a solution. And would you like me to show you? You know, there's something really powerful in that intimacy of helping each other one-on-one. So it's pretty amazing. My life today is just light years from where it was when I came into the rooms, and you know, I'm so glad to be here, to be sober on a Saturday morning, and to be doing this radio show. That's it from us, the Tuesday Big Book Study Group from Wellington. This was the AA meeting on air, Wellington Access Radio. And I guess we should close the meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.